Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm Karen Spies. On Second Wind Women, we talk with women who are pivoting out of a traditional career or a caretaker role or wherever they've been into starting or maintaining their own entrepreneurial venture. I work with women, helping them maintain momentum in their own businesses, and I love talking with women about how they're changing their own lives for the better. So take a listen. I hope you get inspired. I hope you get fortified and know that you're on the right path if you are an entrepreneur. And welcome. I'm here with Carrie Bluebaugh of Listening Works and Act Your Age. And she is a seasoned physical therapist with over 33 years of experience, and she specializes in the care of older adults. And she's been doing that for the last 26 years. She's also the founder of Listening Works, where she leads applied improv training sessions for businesses and professionals focusing on improving collaborative communication and relationships. They do this to, you know, help teamwork and enhance listening skills and for their employees. She also teaches and facilitates medical improv classes. I'm going to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. And workshops to help improve communication and patient care experiences in healthcare systems. As far as her improv background, she is an accomplished improviser and has been performing improv comedy for 12 years, in addition to teaching. And her business, Act Your Age Improv, brings improvisational comedy classes and events to older adults to facilitate the health benefits of laughter. Yay, we like that. And connection using collaborative storytelling. She does a lot of that in senior living communities around the Kansas City area, including Johnson County Parks and Rec 50 Plus program and the University of Kansas Health System Turning Point Center program. That's a mouthful. Welcome, Carrie. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So how did you move from doing PT into improv?
Yeah, it's kind of a long and a short story, I guess. When I started doing improv 12 years ago, I fell in love with it. Not immediately. I immediately came home and said, I'm not, you know, I'll finish my 8-week class, but then I'll never do it again.
Yeah, totally.
12 years later, here I am. But it really aligned. One of the reasons I fell in love with it, it aligned with all my spiritual principles and practices. And I loved the practice of improv and what it can teach you. And then as I was just going along in my life as a physical therapist, healthcare is challenging. Healthcare mm-hmm. has changed a lot. Yeah. Providing rehab services and long-term care models has changed a lot in the last several years and making it kind of challenging. People would call it burnout. I would argue that it's a lot of moral injury versus burnout, which is a whole other conversation that I highly recommend. If you're being told that you're burnout, you might be, and that's okay. And it might be moral injury. And I would encourage people to look into that a little bit more deeply. There's a lot of kind of victim blaming, I think, with the use of burnout. Like we're supposed to fix ourselves.
You're supposed to power through and do everything regardless.
Regardless. Like you're not strong enough. You're not resilient enough. You're not young enough. You're not old enough. You're not experienced enough. You're not
me enough.
Exactly. That's it. Like whatever I am, I'm not that enough. So I should go meditate more, massage more, exercise more, eat right, better. And it does,
and not deal with what is actually messing you up.
Right. Yeah. And it's often the systems that create moral injury for us because we know what we need to do. We know what we can do. And we're working within systems that don't allow us to maybe deliver healthcare or if in education or all the other industries that could be experiencing moral injury. So anyway, I was experiencing a lot of that and just kind of frustration with things that had happened in the healthcare system and specifically with rehab companies. And everything just kind of started happening at the same time of I started teaching some improv classes to older adults. And I'm like, this is kind of cool. This could work. I started learning more about applied improv, and there was just kind of this kind of natural evolution that kind of all came to head at the same time of the way that I have to show up to work in this industry as a rehab director, not always feeling ethical, pushing boundaries that are not comfortable, just kind of aligned with, are there other things I could maybe try to create and do? So it was a little bit of a gradual and yet felt somewhat sometimes sudden thing that happened when I look back on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You said one thing about how improv aligned with your spiritual practices and views. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, I'd love to. Improv is a lot about, well, the basic principle of improv is yes and. So if you've, you know, heard that with Amy Poehler or Tina Fey or something, and the whole idea of yes and is, yes, you accept the reality that your scene partner gives you. If they deem that we are space cowboys on Mars, then we are space cowboys on Mars, regardless if I like that idea or not. To support my scene partner, to move this improv scene forward, I say yes to that in reality and I embrace it. And the and part is adding to it. Yep, and I forgot our spears and cowboy hats on Venus. I'll go back and get them, right? So yes, I agree that we're space cowboys and this is what I'm adding to the story. As a spiritual practice, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in life that we are maybe not so fond of.
And, really?
Yeah.
Never happens to me.
Never happens. Probably not why you have this podcast at all, yeah, or the women that you're talking to. And so we can say, yes, this happened. I don't have to love it. But to deny that reality keeps me stuck in this place. It doesn't forward the plot and the narrative of this amazing story I get to write. And you know, for myself, my husband left when we had a 3-year-old, and I didn't love that. I didn't choose that. I didn't want that. And yet it happened. And so I look back on that time because of the spiritual practices I was working on, practicing at that time. I really had to lean into saying, yes, this is the reality that's occurring. And how do I make life okay for all of us? So that we're all good moving forward. And which seems very basic. And yet I think there's a lot of people, I know a lot of people, I'm sure you do, that truly are still in whatever denial that's happened to them 5 years ago, 25 years ago, they shouldn't have left. That job shouldn't have done this. My child shouldn't have done this. You know, whatever thing shouldn't have happened. And because that happened, everything's been terrible. And if it hadn't happened, things would be different. And we can get very stuck in that narrative of what shouldn't have been. So I just really love that idea of you don't have to like what life hands you. But to deny it and to resist it doesn't forward any momentum in any possibility of change and action. And how can I make this a great story? So that was one. That's one huge one. Improv is all about listening and deep listening in the moment because it's all unscripted. It's made up. We don't plan anything that we do ahead of time. And so to have a really good improv scene, I've got to deeply listen and be mindful in the moment of what you're giving me verbally and non-verbally so that we can create this great thing together. So I love that it's about mindfulness and listening, supporting the people in your life, really without judgment, just unconditionally saying, yeah, I'll get behind you. I can support you. So those are kind of some of the highlights of that, I would say.
And I have to say, I do not appreciate you underselling the yes and thing, because I think that it's so simple, but it's so powerful, right? And as you were saying that, I was thinking about the term, I know this is like not like something for like me to say at all, but like the whole God helps those who help themselves thing.
Yeah.
That's exactly that. Just reframed, right? And so you take what you do have control over, and that's what you add to the situation. I think that's profound, amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody could say mindfulness was not useful ever.
Right. Yeah. So for all of those reasons, that's why, and that's what's really cool about using it, improv and applied, you know, applying improv, which is what applied improv is. I just know I just said that 5 different ways, the same thing, but applying it to workplaces, organizations, businesses, schools, I mean, any place, every place that needs collaborative communication. Like, can we bring that mindset into all these other spaces to where we really can hear one another? And it doesn't mean that you always have to be in agreement with people. But yes and means, yes, I heard what you said. I acknowledge you. I acknowledge your experience, your feelings, your thoughts about this. And
here's the reality of the situation.
Yes. And this is where we are. This is what we can do versus, no, that doesn't work. No, you can't do that. No, we're not going to do that. Yeah, but that's never going to be realistic. You know, there's which is just a polite, dismissive way of saying no. So,
right. And doesn't take into account the fact that the other person has anything to add.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And speaking of that, let's talk about ageism.
Okay. Oh, let's do.
How did you start working with older people? I mean, that's a very distinct group. And when did you start working with older people?
So as a physical therapist, I have always worked with all age groups, not really pediatrics. That's its own special kind of niche that I have done very limited amount. But early in my career, I was a traveling therapist. So I worked in a lot of different, different capacities and different models of care. When I came back to Kansas City in 98, 99, I got a job at a long-term care facility here that also had assisted living, independent living, memory care. So all the levels of care for older adults. And I started out as a rehab director there. And I just kind of took the job because it was available. And I was like, well, I don't know. Let's see how I like it. I've done some work with older adults. And I just continued to fall in love with it. I think it's often seen as a very non-glamorous type of healthcare and therapy. You know, a more sexy type of therapy is to be, you know, being a PT for the Kansas City Chiefs or, you know, working in neuro rehab with people who've had spinal cords and these massive injuries. And so it's kind of, like I said, a little bit of an overlooked area of rehab, but I've really enjoyed it. And my husband jokes that he's always like, you're going to be a great old lady. I'm like, I'm getting closer because I'm working on it. I'm getting there. I've always just kind of leaned into, you know, I don't know. I am an older soul, so it just always worked for me.
How is it different working with older people who are doing improv versus, you know, some people in their 30s, let's say, as older is the little vague itself, you know?
It is a little vague. So when I'm doing my classes at like Johnson County Parks and Rec, the 50 plus program, that tends to be a younger, older demographic. So we still will do a lot of things up on our feet, standing. And if somebody, I had one student who during our 9-week class had a little rehab stint and came back to class. And so I just made sure, you know, when we did our student showcase and different things, we just made accommodations to make sure that she was sitting as much as possible and that we always had her four-wheel walker and everyone else was just kind of aware of locking her, you know, making sure her brakes were locked and just kind of making sure she was safe. Not that she needed people to baby her, but just like, let's all watch out for each other. We're doing this unscripted thing on stage. When I'm teaching classes at senior living communities, so independent living, assisted living, I will do those completely seated. And we always are in a circle. And I feel very strongly that it's like a circle of equality. And so maybe everybody walked into that class and could all be standing and doing it. But I don't want somebody's physicality or mobility limitations to make them feel uncomfortable in a class or less than or limited. And as a PT, as a physical therapist, I'm very acutely aware of that. And I want to keep everybody safe. So in that case, we're bringing all of the mobility issues. We're just all equal. We're all seated. And some of the things that we do a little bit different is maybe when we're doing some of our games, I just know that I'm going to be repeating what people have said. Mm-hmm. So that for some people that have more hearing loss than others, that doesn't have to become a barrier. I have one gentleman that comes who's blind. So I'll like just whisper to him if he has a word on a board that he needs to incorporate into a story. I'll just whisper to him what the word is. Like there's always modifications that you can do with grace and dignity and respect and that we all can just appreciate. So there's some practical distinctions. We'll sometimes do things that again, help that they don't have to work as hard to remember some of the aspects of it, like having the word in front of them in one of the games that they're going to incorporate into the story instead of trying to hold on to that word when I want them to be very mindfully listening to the story coming around. I don't want them to worry about, I had to remember basketball or whatever. Basketball. Yeah. I want them to be present and listening, even though improv is a great thing to help with your memory and cognition. And then I would say what I have realized is there's not that much difference. I mean, people are just people, and people are funny at any age. And people are funny because in improv, you don't have to try to be funny, because that's not usually when you're funny. Right. But you just answer inauthentically and see what comes up, and the funny happens. And because they have these decades of life experience, it can be really rich and satisfying to see some of the stuff that they come up with. And yeah, I've been really, really pleasantly surprised by how well it's gone. And again, like some people with cognitive decline, they'll still come to our class, which is totally fine, especially like at assisted living or independent living. So they've, again, they may just require a little bit more cueing, a little bit more prompting on my part to have them add to their part of the story. And I'm always going to give them that opportunity. I don't want to just take over and say blah, 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 because they have something to offer. Uh-huh. And it might just need to be, what was the dog's name? Why was he here? What did he do? Why was he angry? What, you know, and let them fill in the blanks, and so that they can still contribute to the creative process.
Right. Yeah. I was involved with there was a group in Boulder, Colorado, where I lived for many years, called the Society for Creative Aging. And they used to do theater productions. And because of the fact that memorization could be such a challenge for many people, they did radio plays. So they all were just reading scripts.
Yes.
They did it out. And then they had a woman who did like the sound effects, like in the old days. It was really amazing. And I totally hear what you're saying about people think about the Red Hat Society.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where you get to a certain age and you're like, I don't give a damn.
Yes.
And it's just all stops are pulled out. And there's something really beautiful about that.
Yes. And I do. Yes to all of that. And I do see a lot of that, of just being like, this is who I am. This is what I have to offer. And kind of that being unapologetically yourself. I mean, I know, for me, that's what I'm really loving about this age and moving into this stage of my life, of truly, you know, what people think about me, not my business.
Like, at a certain point, it gets pretty old, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like I'm just like, I mean, yeah, it's very freeing. It's kind of a really cool space to be in, I personally think. Yeah.
Are you at your wit's end and you know you need to make a change, but you just can't seem to find the path forward? I've opened up a couple of Second Wind Clarity sessions. They're fast, one-on-one sessions. And yes, we will do a few somatic exercises to help you get out of your brain. Book it now at secondwindwomen.com/clarity session. Let's get you revved up to pivot towards your more fulfilled life. You mentioned something in the stuff you had written about the uncertainty of the in-between stage of life. And I'm wondering if you could kind of like, so do you really feel like you're giving these, you know, people who are in this situation, like a tool to move forward? And if you could just say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think for myself, I'm definitely in this stage of, I still work as a physical therapist, like a substitute teacher, kind of like, we call it PRN or on call. So I work
You had PT, and I didn't know if that meant part-time.
I know. Sometimes I don't even realize that I'm abbreviating it, because I just see it in its totality instead of its, anyway. So yes, I'm still working as a physical therapist, PRN, which means on call, which is basically like you're a substitute teacher. So for several different companies. So I'm still doing that because I'm in the process of building this other thing. And so I definitely feel like I'm in this space of no longer that. Like I don't think I have an interest or a desire of being a full-time physical therapist anymore. I'm not saying I wouldn't if I needed to or had to. That's not really what I desire or what I vision for myself. And yet I'm not quite there yet. And I don't even know exactly what there looks like, but I'm figuring it out every day. And I'm allowing myself to let the discovery unfold and being okay in this space of uncertainty, of I'm not sure how this is all going to unfold. I have lots of different ideas. I have lots of different paths I could walk down, things to pursue, and just saying yes to the things that make sense and intuitive, feel like they're the correct hits to follow. So it's really embracing the uncertainty. And the beautiful parallel that is to improv is...
Of course. I'm just thinking it as you're saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that, one of the great things you learn in improv is how to embrace uncertainty and how to improve your uncertainty and improve your uncertainty tolerance. And as we get older, there's a lot more uncertainty in life. There's always uncertainty in life, but somehow I think when we're younger, youth tells us that we have a lot more control and there's a lot more certainty than exists. And that's okay. I think we've got to probably have that at that stage in our life. As we get older, disease processes are becoming caregivers or our spouse dying, their health changing. There's just all sorts of uncertain things. You know, when you get a diagnosis that is a chronic disease, you don't know how that's always going to, what the rest of your life is going to look like exactly. So in being able to embrace that, I don't know what this looks like. These things I can't control. These things I can, this is where I focus on and embracing the unknown of that. So I think it's a really wonderful skill and life skill and capacity to learn to embrace uncertainty. I heard a woman, and she was like in her 80s. She was on the Mel Robbins show. And I apologize. I can't think of her name because she was fascinating. But she talked about embracing the power of uncertainty because we don't know anything. Like very few things do we know. So leaning into not knowing it, and then the reality that there's so much that we don't know is where our power lies versus holding on tightly to a cup of water in our hands that's just going through our fingers and wondering why, you know, why we're unsuccessful and why we're so stressed out because we're grasping at something that it's not a real thing to hold on to.
I love it how you're talking about transitions as this huge, like, philosophical life lesson. That's so amazing and really incredible. It really ties in there well. And I can see when you're talking, when I think about, I was saying this to somebody the other day who was like, I refuse to use AI. I don't know about technology. I don't know about all this computer stuff. And I was like, if you don't keep up in 10 or 15 years, you're not going to be able to do anything.
Right.
And I think about, you know, my mother who's a boomer and who's learned how to use email, pay all her bills online and all this stuff. And adaptability, I think, is like the most important thing to living a rich, connected life.
Right. Absolutely. And yeah, we don't know how all that's going to pan out. And to your point, I mean, there's hardly been any invention or any big shift in paradigm that hasn't had its pros and cons. But yeah, certainly AI is going to add, like, it's going to enhance what some people can have access to and their adaptability and access. I mean, and then there's going to be things that are like, yeah, no, that's bad. That's unfortunate. And we're going to have to muck it through and figure it out.
Well, the thing is you don't exist in a time capsule. I mean, I saw a lady at Costco who was an older lady and she was trying to check out through the self checkout and she couldn't figure it out. And I was like, hello, talk to that woman over there. She will help you. But she had been really intimidated, you know, and I first saw her and she was like, do I go in the regular line? Do I go in the self-checkout? Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I think there's a lot of great things. Yeah.
Yeah. And kudos to her for saying, I'm going to try to figure this out. You know, I mean, and whether it went well or not, none of us start anything the first time well. I mean, that's kind of what I love about any stage of life. And I think especially middle age, older age, the great things it does for our brains when we learn new skills, when we learn new craft, when we learn anything new, we're creating new neural pathways. I mean, our brain just loves it. And we're not going to start out doing it well. So when I started doing improv, I was 45, 46. My daughter was a seventh grader. And I'm so grateful I started a brand new thing, learning this big new thing at such an interesting time in life to match up with my daughter, I gained such empathy and compassion for how it feels, and pardon my language, to suck at something new. Because at that point in your life, like, okay, I've been a parent for a while.
Yeah.
I kind of know what's going on here. I've done my job for a few decades. I know what's going on there. I've been married twice. So surely I know what I'm doing there.
You got that figured out now.
But you know, like, so there's not that many, and then to learn something so brand new, and then to try to go on stage and fail greatly in front of a bunch of people.
Fail big.
And I have failed beautifully in many, you know, I've had wild successes and I've had incredible failures on stage, because that's life and that's improv. But for my seventh grader to see that, and to see that it's okay to dare greatly, to steal Brene Brown, to put yourself out there, to see what happens. And it gave me this great empathy to remember what, to kind of remember what it's like as a teen, as a tween, when you're doing everything new for the first time, and certainly doing, even though you've played basketball for years, now you're playing basketball in a new body, and that's frustrating, and going through puberty, and that, I mean, like, everything's new and different, and you don't do any of it well to start with, and it doesn't feel awesome. And to remember that was just this really wonderful gift of empathy, compassion, understanding that. And so I think anytime in our middle age, older age, the more we can just learn new things, I think it's a wonderful thing. And there's a lot of research that shows taking any kind of art class, whether it's painting, learning improv, dance, whatever, like, it will add 7.5 years to your life. So, because then you're building community and all those things, but
all the things that matter. And it's funny how so many things that you're saying are applying, like, not only kind of philosophically, pseudo spiritually to the life process, but I'm thinking of, you know, I spent a lot of time involved with this startup community, and one of the main tenets of the startup community is fail fast, fail often. And also, if you aren't embarrassed by your first release, you waited too long, which is really amazing, because what happens is we get into this thing, especially with social, I mean, don't even get me started on social media, right?
Yes.
But we see everybody's final version.
Yes.
Oh, if only I could do something, but it wouldn't be nearly that good. So I might as well not even try.
Right.
Right. So, right. If you try first and you're willing to be like, it might suck.
Yeah.
It might suck. How much further will that get you than if you're like, I better hold back?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes to all of that. I know I'm a broken record, and one of the things that improv also teaches us is to decrease our failure aversion, or improve how much we're willing to embrace failure. And to all the things that you're saying, like, yeah, it's just all very much an improv mindset. Like, done is better than perfect. Like, let's put it out there and then figure it out. And, I think striving for excellence is always good, but there's, I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The Four Agreements. It came out probably 25 plus years ago. And when he's talking about always doing your best, in that section, he talks about perfectionism, and it has stuck with me. I read that book over 25 years ago. And the line that still sticks with me is, perfectionism is the highest form of self-abuse.
I know.
And I was like, wow. And I have
not in the good way.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good. I mean, and that just hit me hard 25 years ago. It hit me profoundly as someone who was striving very hard in the age of Martha Stewart to be everything being perfect. And I was just like, yeah, this is, to what end, you know, is chasing this thing that doesn't exist.
It reminds me a little bit more. So when I grew up, I was involved in theater. I've done improv for years.
We should play.
Oh, we'd love that. We'd love, love, love that.
Growing up, you were in theater.
Oh, I was shy. I considered myself to be shy when I was growing up. And then I made myself get involved in theater because I was like, I know this would be really good for me. And I'd love to see people clapping for me. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Right. But as I got more into a more public space, I realized that a lot of my shyness was really this feeling like, nobody could ever understand me. I'm not, everything I do is like not quite good enough. So I don't even want to, and it's just like an extension of that.
Yeah.
Self-criticism, self, you know, which is what perfectionism it really is self-criticism, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if I say, if my belief is that I'm shy, then I don't have to put myself out there because because my narrative and my story about myself can be, I'm introverted, I'm shy, which I know are different, but people interchange them. And so I wouldn't possibly do that. And so it's like my own get out of jail card before I've even tried something. That's fascinating.
Yeah. I gave a talk last week and this one guy said, like, how do you prepare to talk to a big group full of people? And I told him, I'm like, you know, they tell you to picture everyone in your underwear, but I just find that very distracting. Right. I don't think that's a good place to put your brain. But I was like, why do you think everybody's looking at you with these critical eyes? Because you're looking at yourself with these critical eyes.
Yes.
Just consider that you're there all together and you're having a conversation and they're quiet for a lot of it.
Yes. Right? Yes.
But to me, that's the whole pressure of not all really of performing on stage, because that really like brings it out, but in any forum, mm-hmm. right? And you're in a group of 10 people and you want to step up and say something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very fascinating thing when I'm doing presentations. That's an interesting thing because I don't usually get that nervous about it. And to your point, I think because of my worldview, I just assume everyone's so excited to be there to hear me talk.
I mean, and why would you assume, even if it's true, it would benefit you to assume that everybody was excited. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they're not, okay. I mean, I hope you learn something or enjoy it. And if not, not that I don't care. But again, that's not my business.
Right.
I came and did what was mine to do. I was asked to do this thing. I did this thing to the best of my ability. I came prepared. I gave it the time and the energy and, you know, that was needed to do this really, really well. And if it doesn't land for you, okay, that's okay. I mean, like, take it or leave it. Like, I would love for it to land for everybody, but I've done all of my due diligence. I've done all of my preparation, and whether or not you like me or not, or liked my presentation, isn't fully my business. If you have helpful feedback to me, I want to hear it.
Of course.
If you have some helpful feedback for me, I absolutely want it. Yeah, I would love to hear that, and I welcome it.
Right.
But yeah, I guess, again, it's one of those things that I feel like this stage of life, there's just, for me, has been this freedom of, I've done all that's within my power right now to prepare for this moment, and I'm going to give the best that I have. And then if I get notes and feedback that help me prepare better and do better next time, I will absolutely do that. And I'll learn and I'll take accountability and I'm going to learn from how I could do things better. But I don't really see the benefit of beating myself up over any of it.
It's,
I mean,
so
if I didn't prepare, if I'm ill-prepared, I took shortcuts, if I didn't do the things I needed to do, then yeah, come on, like have a serious little chat with yourself.
Right.
But if I've done what's mine to do,
I mean, if you're already beating yourself up, feedback is the last thing you need.
Right. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think when you can just honestly tell yourself, yeah, you just kind of, you didn't read the room. You kind of, maybe you should have just pivoted sooner than you did. That wasn't landing. So we probably should have gone to B and C, and you thought that you could make that work, but maybe this would have been better next time. Yeah. Okay. I'll try that. I mean, like you can have honest, you know, when we can fully embrace the totality of ourselves, I think then we can have these honest conversations and assessments of ourselves to say, you killed it here. You missed the mark here. So this is how I would do it different next time. But yeah, I don't know.
So good. So good. So how can people work with you, Carrie? How can they get a hold of you? And do you have anything for the listeners that would entice them to work with you? Or
oh, Yes. Well, so let's see. So yes, my business is Listening Works and my website is very close to being ready to roll. And with that, again, I do applied improv workshops, training sessions, really for any kind of businesses, corporations.
Is it just medical in Kansas City?
I'm in Kansas City. Okay. Kansas City. And I'm happy to, you know, go somewhere else, but I do live in Kansas City. And then my niche is medical improv. And so I do teach continuing education classes on using medical improv.
We didn't talk at all about medical improv. Can you say something about it?
I will say something about it. It's basically just everything we've already talked about applied improv. It's just niche into the healthcare spaces. So it's improving collaborative communication between the healthcare professional and patients, clients, family members, and improving that relationship, improving that space, teaching healthcare providers not to try to follow role playing and assuming that if I deliver bad news to you or whatever, that you're going to automatically react this way. And then I'm going to say this because everybody's a different person. So can I read you nonverbally? And can I use yes and in a way to be a more collaborative, safe way to communicate and listen to my patients? So it is not teaching you how to be funny with your patients. It's not teaching you how to do an improv scene based off, you know, a medical scenario on stage. But and I will say a quick thing. PR did a story this summer in June, July. The Mayo Clinic has been using medical improv since 2017 as a training tool with all of their physicians there. Mm-hmm. Again, to deepen listening, compassion, non-judgmental listening, empathy, improving interdepartmental communication that improves efficacy, efficiency, and safety in a clinical setting. So I'm teaching continuing education classes, and I'm teaching one in November here in Kansas City. But then I'd also just love to work with people's businesses, organizations, and it's my classes, trainings, workshops, highly interactive. We do improv theater exercises to teach and learn a lesson. We debrief it. We talk about how that would work and apply to whatever their setting is. If people want to drill down on teamwork and support, then we can do exercises that drill down on that, on creativity, on thinking on your feet, spontaneity, on nonverbal communication, listening, yada, yada. It's really cool stuff.
It's amazing.
It's really fun. Yeah.
Fantastic. So do you have any socials or is it just the website?
So there's me, Carrie Blueball. You can find me there. And then I have Facebook. I have a Facebook page, Act Your Age Improv. And then my website will be listeningworksllc.com. And that's about ready to go live. And I'm on LinkedIn, but I need to do more on that, to be quite honest.
Doesn't everybody?
But, you know, well, we can lean into that at some point. Well, you know, we'll get to all of it. But anyway, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I so enjoyed talking with you. And
thank
I know
you.
That people who listen to this are going to get just a ton out of it.
Thank you. This has been a huge pleasure. And I really appreciate the invitation to let me share a little bit about myself and what I do and what I love with you. So thank you very much.
You're so, so welcome. Talking with Carrie was so fun. I cannot wait to get out and do more improv. And you should too. Keep in mind, your second wind might change your direction, but you're still going. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us.